Up next, Ecotopia, where we'll be talking about innovations in sustainability.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, Exploring Ecosystems, Environmental, Social, and Technological. I'm Susan Chudy. Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR listeners and by the COVID-conscious Chico-certified farmers markets, with year-round markets Wednesdays in the North Valley Plaza and Saturdays in Chico at 4th and Wall. The Chico Certified Farmers Market, bringing food lovers and farmers together since 1980. The opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, or programmers.
I'm Stephen Schutte. The title of this program is Sustainable Innovations 2021. And we'll look at some of the proposed solutions to crises in air, water, and the earth. As many experts have declared, most forcefully Bill McKibben, whom we've interviewed on this program, the earth is at a tipping point. We're at the brink, or maybe even over it.
A couple of years ago, we interviewed Michael Hausman, who, along with Joyce Hausman, wrote a book called Technofix, Technology Won't Save Us or the Planet. They argued, and we have accepted the validity of their argument, that humankind can't sit around waiting for some future technological development that will miraculously bring an end to climate disruption.
One example of technological wishful thinking came with the disposal of nuclear power rods, fuel rods, which in the 50s were submerged in ponds while experts promised a better means of disposal.
Most of those highly radioactive wastes are still in ponds, awaiting a technology that can dispose of them someplace, while new rods continue to be inserted into nuclear power plants. We had one illustration of the failure of that strategy in the Fukushima Daiichi, where 10 years after a pond broke, the Japanese are still cleaning up, including moving toward dumping radioactive wastes into the sea.
So there's no magic vacuum cleaner that will suddenly and safely dispose of nuclear waste. There's no gizmos on the horizon that will suck up all the excess carbon dioxide. There's nothing around that's going to cure plastic waste's toxic oil spills that we don't know about yet. As the Hausmans argue in their book, we cannot continue in our ways and expect science and technology to save the day.
However, we cannot be Luddites and deny technology or fail to recognize that ecotopian systems, social, technological, and environmental, can and do interact. For example, Elizabeth Kolbert, award-winning author of The Sixth Extinction, has written a new book entitled Under a White Sky, The Nature of the Future. She suggests that just as we have engineered our way into planetary crisis, most notably starting with the Industrial Revolution, we may be able to apply bioengineering to, if not solve the problems, at least mitigate them.
Kolbert writes in detail about the Chicago River, which used to flow into Lake Michigan, but since 1887 has been dammed so that its water flows via the Illinois River to the Mississippi, thus sending Chicago's pollution elsewhere. But this engineering miracle created new problems, among them that fairly recently invasive carp have now come up the Mississippi. They're now at the gates of the Chicago River trying to get into Lake Michigan, whose ecosystem they would destroy. So to prevent this, engineers in Chicago have created giant electro nets. These are submerged in the river close to the dams. They zap the carp and encourage them to go back downstream. Quote, first you dam the river, Elizabeth Kolbert observes, then you electrify it. While this is a dubious solution for obvious reasons, it does, Kolbert notes, provide a way of engineering our way out of a mess we engineered in the first place. We can certainly be skeptical of the solution. What other unanticipated results might it create? Hopefully, she suggests, we will be smarter with these engineered solutions.
Another river that receives Kolbert's attention is the Mississippi at its delta in Louisiana, which has been diked and channeled both miraculously and dangerously for over a century. The flaws in man-made dams and levees around New Orleans were in large measure responsible for the disastrous flooding and loss of life during Hurricane Katrina. We cannot transplant the whole city of New Orleans to someplace safer, but Kolbert describes a number of hugely expensive projects currently underway, including more dams built upstream that can help prevent a recurrence of Katrina's destruction. Are these more of the same dam follies, or do they have the potential to engineer our way out of engineered problems? Kolbert is noncommittal on the answer to that question, but she does argue that not all engineered solutions are bad, though none can take us back to the pristine Garden of Eden.
The final topic we'll discuss from Elizabeth Kolbert's very readable and informative book is the source of her title, Under a White Sky. She asks, can we geoengineer our way out of climate change? One solution being explored reminds us of the Beatles song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Researchers are seriously looking into shielding the Earth from the sun and reducing planetary temperature rise. Scientists at Harvard's Solar Geoengineering Program, funded in part by Bill Gates, is looking into what's euphemistically called solar radiation management. One of their ideas is that we could inject materials into the stratosphere, small particles that would effectively serve as a solar umbrella. One candidate for this material is diamonds. Just a few pounds of powdered diamonds, highly reflective, biologically inert, would form a shield and, along the way, turn the sky white. After a few years, the diamond particles would sink back to Earth, so there would be opportunities to rethink the strategy. And if you don't believe the strategy would lower temperatures, think about the idea of the nuclear winter, where a nuclear holocaust would raise so much dirt and dust into the atmosphere that the Earth would go cold, and with it, human populations.
Hafina voiced our admittedly small understanding of some of these engineered solutions and maintaining considerable skepticism for engineering as opposed to simply cutting down on human waste. We'll take a short break and look at a few innovations that seem somewhat promising for bringing a degree of planetary healing. This is Ecotopia on KZFR.
Hives with cybernetic memories, vast single organisms, their DNA coated in silicon.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We're looking at some innovations for sustainability that are emerging in 2021.
Let's start with solar, which clearly is making a dent in electric markets and will continue to do so as states like California ban fossil fuels. How Stuff Works discusses several innovations. The hot new item is perovskite, a calcium titanium oxide mineral that can literally be painted or sprayed on existing or new solar panels to dramatically increase their productivity. Some folks are even imagining that perovskite paint could be sprayed on automobiles to simplify electrical charging, recharging. Perovskite is being painted on new solar panels, turning into pliable film, and even employed to recondition earlier, less efficient panels. Also under development are solar windows, which can be treated with a new electricity-generating coating, remain see-through, yet have the ability to convert sunshine to energy. Thus, all the glass on the sides of houses, and especially high-rise buildings, could be turned into solar-generating power. The coating of these solar windows produces the world's smallest functional solar cells, measuring less than one quarter the size of a grain of rice, and can be applied at room temperature with no need for specialized production facilities.
The How Stuff Works website also tells us that engineers are experimenting with solar balloons. These are good-sized, large-sized donuts filled with helium. They could float above the clouds, and thus, on gray days, you could still get solar power. One problem is they need a heck of a long extension cord to get that juice to the ground. Another innovation is called Harry Solar. It involves using nanowires that are fastened to fabric, creating kind of a hairy fabric. These can absorb much more solar energy than that absorbed by typical flat solar panels. And finally, in the works are infrared panels, maybe using vanadium and titanium. These can capture the abundant infrared light that conventional solar panels miss.
Innovations in wind power are also, well, in the wind, according to Treehugger. Airborne wind turbines are tubes or shells that are sent 1,000 or more feet in the air, where wind currents are more consistent than on the ground. But, like balloons, also require conductive tethers linked to the ground. People are actually working on wireless electricity to try to solve problems like that. The wind harvester uses horizontal aerofoils similar to those used on airplanes. These are virtually noise-free and can generate electricity at low wind speeds, but also be operational at higher wind speeds than current wind turbines. And bladeless wind power generators on flexible poles. I think there was someone at Chico State who was working on these flexible poles. They're stacks of ceramic discs separated by electrodes, and when the wind sways the poles, the stack of piezoelectric discs is forced into compression, thus generating current through the electrodes.
Other wind collectors discussed by Treehugger include wind turbine lenses. Japanese researchers say that they've discovered a simple way to make wind turbines up to 3 times as efficient. They place a wind lens around the turbine blades, and they claim that wind power can be cheaper and more efficient through this process. They also work on vertical axis turbines. Much shorter than big wind turbines, these are vertical installations. They spin like a barber pole.
Oh, maybe that's the Chico State one. Sorry.
That might be. Yeah. We did a show earlier, a science fiction novel that involved these vertical axis turbines. The idea is they spin around their own axis. You don't have to build these huge turbines up in the air. They've been effectively created. They're quite useful for home or small scale farm installations. A not so new idea is the idea of using water for energy storage. As electricity is generated by presumably sustainable means, that electricity is used to pump water uphill into storage devices, ponds, lakes, tanks. The water is then released to regenerate electricity through turbines. This is more or less precisely what the dams and generating plants on the Feather River do, though new models and innovative models are cheaper, more efficient, and, importantly, less likely to raise the water temperature. And finally, a Dutch company called Ecofies is leading a project, if the whole crazy scheme pans out, would turn offshore wind farms into actual farms. The company thinks seaweed can be cultivated around offshore wind turbines, harvested for the production of fish and animal feed, biofuels, and energy.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and we're talking about innovations for a more sustainable world. We'll take a music break and be back to talk about cool, clear water.
Without the taste of water, cool water. Old Dan and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water, cool, clear water. The nights are each star's a pool of water, cool water. And with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water, cool, clear water. Keep a moving. Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you and me? Ooh.
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight we're talking about some ways in which technology and engineering, innovation, not miraculous techno fixes, could help solve some sustainability problems.
We now turn to water. Next week on Ecotopia, we'll be interviewing Mark Erics. He's author of a book called Dreamt Land that's being discussed by the Aqua Alliance Book Club under the leadership of Kathy Faith. Be sure to tune in for this discussion, which will include some of the ways California has engineered its own water problems. We'll ask Mark whether we can find sensible engineering solutions to quenching our insatiable thirst.
But tonight we want to discuss some innovations in water supply and purification that are being tried out in other parts of the world, particularly those that are sometimes called developing or third world countries. The UK Guardian discusses several of these in an interview with Vincent Casey. He's a senior water and sanitation advisor at WaterAid, and Hannah Safford, an energy and environmental policy analyst, to assess some of the most creative approaches. What about a drinkable book? In partnership with nonprofit Water is Life, researchers at Carnegie Mellon University have developed this education and filtration tool. Each page of the book provides basic water and sanitation advice, such as the importance of keeping contaminants like rubbish and feces away from the water, often unknown in developing countries. Perhaps more novel is that the advice is printed on, quote, scientific coffee filter, paper that can be used to purify drinking water and reduce 99.9% of bacteria. Each book has enough filtration seats to provide its reader with clean water for 4 years. It's being distributed in Ghana, Kenya, Haiti, Ethiopia, India, Tanzania, and a Farsi version of the book is in development.
And then there's a device called a water seer, S-E-E-R. It looks a little bit like a well with a tube sticking above the ground, but instead of withdrawing groundwater, the water seer uses the surrounding environment to extract water from the atmosphere. Most of the device is planted 6 feet below the surface, where its lower bulb chamber is surrounded by relatively cool earth. Above ground, wind spins a small turbine, which turns fan blades inside the device. These blades send the air into an internal condensation chamber, where, as the warm air cools, the vapor condenses on the sides of the chamber. Water then flows down to the lower chamber and can be extracted with a simple pump and hose. In ideal conditions, it can collect 37 liters of water a day.
We've also heard about fog catchers, where mesh nets capture moisture from fog, which drips into collection trays after condensation. The largest of these projects is on the slope of Mount Bazmezgida, a microclimate in Morocco, where 6,300 liters of water can be harvested per day. The water is clean, free, and instant. First developed in South America, fog catching systems also exist in Chile, Peru, Ghana, Eritrea, South Africa, and California.
Although desalination is in use around the world and better, cleaner systems are being developed, the experts in this Guardian article say desalination should only be used as a last resort. Most desalination systems involve a lot of power inputs, and furthermore, there's waste, salt, to be disposed of, either on the ground or back into the ocean. And there have been problems even around Miami, where desalination plants raise the salt level to dangerous levels in the pools and ponds close by the shore. In regions where there is truly not enough fresh water to meet demand, a cheaper and less energy-intensive desalination method is certainly a good thing. This article in The Guardian concludes that we need worldwide changes to policy and management, not just focusing on a technical solution.
We in California are acutely aware of the need to cut down on water use, and at times the state has been able to conserve. Our guest next week, Mark Arax, will likely discuss the California agricultural tradition of growing crops like pistachios in the desert, where they could never survive without dams, canals, and groundwater pumping. Green Tumble, a magazine for farmers, gives us a number of ideas on how to reduce water usage. Make drip irrigation more efficient by repairing systems, being creative with watering schedules, measuring soil moistures, and using mulch and ground cover. Support healthy soils with lots of organic matter that retains water much more effectively than degraded soil does. Methods include adding compost, no-till farming, and the use of permaculture farming methods such as building swales. One innovation called the Hügelkultur techniques involves growing plants in mounds of woody debris buried in soil, even logs and branches, and then topping that with a layer of soil. The woody junk slowly decomposes, sequestering carbon, adding nutrients, and creating fluffy soil. A no-brainer for water consumption, but a big problem in California is growing more water-efficient crops according to regional climate. Many of the commonly traded agricultural crops grown today, like California pistachios, are grown in large plots of monocultures and require large amounts of water to produce them. By growing a variety of less thirsty crops, including perennial crops with deep roots, we can reduce the demand for water in agriculture. This means not growing thirsty crops in a very arid region, but instead growing those crops that are naturally drought tolerant.
Another recommendation closely related from Green Tumble is dry farming. And we know there is dry farming going on in our county. Dry farming relies only on moisture present in the soil to produce crops when rain is scarce. Implementation of such a method involves using specific types of low-impact tilling and focusing on microclimates. And dry farming focuses on growing crops that are growable given local rainfall. Farmers, as some do now, can also harvest rainwater, creating ponds and wetlands that capture rainwater throughout the year that can be used during the dry season. Such ponds and wetlands can also provide habitat for waterfowl and other aquatic wildlife. Building swales on contour offers an opportunity to capture and hold water high on the landscape and to recharge groundwater supplies. Impressive results in the Middle East have shown how swales can turn the desert into productive orchards without supplementary irrigation. Planting cover crops is another low-tech idea whose time has come. Cover crops help to reduce weeds, increase soil fertility and compaction. They allow for easier penetration of water into the soil and improve its capacity to hold water.
This is another important issue in Butte County. One water-saving technique that is our responsibility and not that of farmers is addressing and reducing food waste. In today's world, approximately one-third of food that is produced is wasted. By reducing the amount of food we waste, we can also reduce the amount of water, land, and energy that is used to produce food. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We'll take a short break and talk about innovations in reducing the waste system. In the meantime, let's think about eating all that good food.
It's gonna make your head run like a machine. Brain food, it's gonna gonna make you smart, dude.
Brain food, eat it up.
Get your head ready, put your mind in the right mood.
Brain food, eat it up.
Blueberries are what you chew if you wanna elevate your IQ. Folic acid and whole wheat bread, now that's a smart thing to feed your head. Brain food, it's gonna make you smart, dude. Get your head ready, put your mind in the right mood.
Brain food, eat it up.
And your brain won't mind when it's time for dessert. Oh no, 'cause even scientists, they'll admit a little chocolate never.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR Chico, 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. In this program, we're talking about innovations that can make our world sustainable. We know that our lands and waters are bursting with trash. A group called Citizens Sustainable has a number of practical ideas that can help us reduce the waste stream. The first idea touches very close to us home in Oroville. In Oroville, as you may have read in the paper and seen on Action News, recycled plastic soda bottles are being added to asphalt mixes on Highway 162 west of town. Action News says this is the first case in North America where recycled plastic soft drink bottles are being used. Caltrans first scrapes up the old asphalt. It's then crumbled. Then this is mixed with soda bottles, about 150,000 bottles per mile, heated up, spread on the road like traditional asphalt. And this is allegedly more durable, it's certainly cheaper, and it helps to get rid of the plastic soda bottle stream. Citizens Sustainable also says the day may come when we'll be driving our hopefully electric cars on plastic roads. There's a company named KWS that's converting plastic into hollow prefabricated modules, blocks. These can be lined next to one another like you're making a line of saltine crackers. Mm-hmm. They make construction faster, they can be easily replaced, they last longer than asphalt, and when they wear out, you just pull out the broken modules and replace them with new ones. It's a possible solution to pothole problems.
Pothole problems? What about fly larvae to recycle organic trash? Insects provide a great ecological service to reducing the immense amount of food waste dumped in landfills each year. Enter the black soldier fly larvae. This particular type of larva is ideal because it has a vociferous appetite. About 2.5 pounds of larva can eat through 5 pounds of food waste in 4 hours. That's eating twice their own weight. And get ready. They are a great source of sustainable protein for aquaculture, pets as animal feed, and yes, also for humans. According to the Smithsonian, larvae from black soldier flies already eat the food waste from about 2,000 restaurants in China. Once the larvae are nice and fat, they can be fed to chickens, fish, turtles,
and people. Yes.
Most of us have grown at the movie Soylent Green, people that are a little bit older, that is, where human bodies are turned into food for more human bodies. We're not ready for that. Composting human bodies is being explored, however. Recompose, formerly the Urban Death Project, offers an alternative to cremation and conventional burial practices by gently converting human remains into soil. Check out recompose.life for more information.
Citizens Sustainable suggests doing more with waste glass. So, yes, glass is recyclable, but a large amount of glass isn't recycled and ends up in the landfill. This is a problem because glass will take, they say, about 1 million years to break down. What are we to do with all this glass? Some smart engineers are saying, build with it. A report from the Journal of Cleaner Production finds that waste glass can be repurposed into building material without needing to remelt it and without requiring much water to produce. And in fact, in Susan's and my travels in Africa, we've also seen family homes built out of bottles held together with stucco. This makes glass recycling much more efficient.
And how about zero waste and package-free stores? The online package-free shop says every single one of their products is compostable, recyclable, or reusable in some way, even the packaging of their products. It is incredibly hard for companies to completely avoid packaging for their products. However, that doesn't mean the packaging needs to be made of non-recyclable plastics or other disposable packaging. That's at the core of package-free and zero-waste shops. There's a growing number of stores where customers bring their own containers and bags. My son always brings several tins in a little package with him to a restaurant. But at these stores, they weigh your containers at the beginning of the trip, fill the containers with food or other products, and pay at the counter.
We are working on ways to turn waste into energy. Here in Butte County, there's a good deal of discussion of biomass, which essentially means turning down trees and branches into fuel for power generators. These devices still do create CO2 and other waste gases, but research indicates that they are far more efficient than, say, one of the wildfires they can help to prevent. According to the market analyst Grand View Research, the global economy for turning trash into electricity could reach $37.64 billion, especially as technology improves to make trash burning more economically and environmentally efficient. Sweden was one of the first countries to revolutionize this process, and their technology got so good that they ran out of their own trash to burn. They had to import trash from other countries to keep their recycling plants going. Less than 1% of Sweden's trash is sent to landfills, and over 50% of Swedish household waste is converted into energy to heat their homes. So, we'd like to point out again, burning is not a permanent solution. Solar and wind and other forms of electricity generation are the at least semi-permanent solution. But in the meantime, burning safely and efficiently can help us make that transition to 100% renewable.
Okay, this is a bad one. Cigarettes are the most littered item in the U.S. as well as worldwide, and cigarette butts make up to 30 to 40% of all collected litter. 75% of smokers report tossing cigarette butts into the ground or out their car window. Cigarette butts are not biodegradable and leach harmful substances into the environment. Among many other toxic chemicals, cigarettes contain arsenic, which is used in rat poison and is therefore deadly to many animals. In addition, the harmful and toxic chemicals contained in cigarettes end up in our soils and water, and thus our food chain and drinking water. A company called TerraCycle is incentivizing individuals to pick up cigarette ends. Volunteers sign up on their website for free, pick up cigarette butts, and repurpose and ship them for free to the company, which removes the waste and ash, repurposes the butts into plastic pallets for reuses more for every pound an individual sends in. TerraCycle donates $1 to Keep America Beautiful Cigarette Litter Prevention Program. People get to feel good about clearing up their streets and cleaning up a whole country. Google TerraCycle, TerraCycle.
You can, of course, put solar panels on your roof, but a company named Continuous Materials is working on roofs made from recycled paper and plastic. A typical non-residential flat roof has to be replaced every 20 years or so. Having a roof material that is sustainable could have a huge impact on the environment. Continuous Materials has a closed-loop solution for roof cover boards used on these roofs. They make 100% upcycled roof cover boards from plastic and paper waste. For every 1,000 square feet installed, nearly 2,000 pounds of paper and plastic are diverted from the landfills. Also, in 20 years or so, these boards can be recycled at the end of their life. Check them out at continuousmaterials.com. This is also a zero-waste, zero-water company.
Okay, this one is a little crazy, a bit off the wall, literally, but hear me out. If you eat ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise, or any other liquid that comes in a container, you know that some of the stuff inevitably ends up sticking to the wall of the container. It's annoying when you just keep shaking the bottle trying to get the last bit out, but it refuses to go. So you end up chucking the container. No, you rinse it out and you put it in your recycling
bin.
You
also stick your finger in there trying to get the last of the mustard out.
But imagine the amount of food waste all the collectively thrown out condiments of the world causes. And imagine all the plastics that can't be recycled because of the leftover food residue. If only there was a way to get out all the contents of a condiment container. Something innovative is called LiquiGlide technology. Liquids slide around the inside of the container with ease, making sure all the contents exit when you tip the bottle. Consumers save money by using all the condiments they bought. Less food waste winds up in the landfill, and the containers themselves won't be contaminated with food waste and thus will be more easily recycled. I don't want to think about what makes it ooze out, though. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We'll listen to some music and then talk about innovations in housing for homeless. This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, and we're talking about innovations for a sustainable planet. In a change of direction, we'll discuss innovative projects for housing the homeless, an issue that many cities are is working on. Chico certainly needs some innovation here, though we also want to give full credit to organizations like the Chico Housing Action Team, who have been highly creative in helping homeless people not only find shelter, but to gain access to social services. In the meantime, the City Council has baldly refused to seek solutions, and we have yet to see if the injunction by the courts to prevent rousting people from the parks will lead to genuine solutions. Springwise.com, a UK organization, has several suggestions, some familiar, some less so. Buses for Homeless is, and that's buses, the number four, Homeless, is taking decommissioned London double-decker buses and turning them into shelters. We've wondered about that possibility when we pass the Chico Scrap Metal in Durham and see their lineup of decaying school buses. In fact, one of our sons purchased a used school bus and turned it into a very comfortable living space that was unfortunately destroyed in the campfire. Tiny houses, of course, have been on the agenda of CHAP for several years, sadly to be opposed by not in my backyard protests. Nevertheless, there's a plethora of tiny house designs on the market, many of which can be created cheaply and beautifully. City permitting regulations often stand in the way of the tiny houses.
Mashable.com cautions that gadgets, apps, and prototypes are temporary fixes. We need to tackle poverty, lack of affordable housing, unemployment, and more to truly arrive at solutions. But in the meantime, innovations can offer much-needed support to some of the world's most vulnerable populations. The Empower Coat, capital E, capital M-P-W-R Coat. It's the Empowerment Plan. It's a Detroit-based nonprofit that aims to lift people out of poverty and homelessness through employment. Created an innovative coat that doubles as a sleeping bag and an over-the-shoulder bag for homeless populations. Their coat is a durable, water-resistant jacket made of Cordura fabric from workwear company Carhartt, upcycled automotive insulation from General Motors, and materials from other donors. It costs about $100 to sponsor a coat distributed to those in need. Empower Coats have also been donated across 40 states in the U.S., 7 Canadian provinces, and several other countries around the world. LavaMae, L-A-V-A-M-A-E, Mobile Showers. LavaMae launched in June 2014. It's a San Francisco-based nonprofit offering mobile showers and sanitation to people experiencing homelessness. The goal isn't just cleanliness, it's to provide dignity and radical hospitality. The effort started when founder and CEO Donis Sandoval converted a defunct San Francisco city bus into a mobile shower unit. It has grown to provide commercial shower trailers and other hygiene services to more than 2,400 people.
Weatherhide is a reversible tent created by Billion Bricks, a nonprofit working with homeless and displaced communities in South and Southeast Asia. It protects homeless populations in impoverished communities in lieu of affordable shelter, with one side keeping out cold temperatures and the other side lined with reflective panels to keep out extreme heat. The goal of the easy-to-assemble tent, according to Billion Bricks, is to save children's lives, offer privacy for women, and allow adaptation to urban environments. A Kickstarter campaign to provide 500 tents to families in need raised more than $145,000 in November of 2016. LavaMae is currently expanding to Los Angeles. At the end of 2016, Donis Sandoval received Kind Foundation's $500,000 grand prize for transforming her community through kindness. She plans to use the money to help other organizations reproduce LavaMae's model.
While Chico muddles its way toward a sanctioned campground, Los Angeles has opened a totally low-tech encampment in a commercial block beside the 101 freeway in East Hollywood. They simply converted a parking lot. This comes 1 month after LA officials cleared what was one of the city's largest encampments. Inside a fence, The parking lot turned campground can accommodate about 120 people at a time in 12-foot by 12-foot spots marked by white squares painted on the asphalt. Campers can bring in their own tents, whatever other belongings fit inside their assigned space. A half dozen porta-potties stand in a row along one side of the lot. The site also provides showers, three meals a day, and 24-hour security. Campers get entered into the county's database for matching unhoused people with social services. It's called the Coordinated Entry System. We might have some reservations about putting people on an asphalt parking lot, but there's also a lot of raw ground in a place like Chico where the same kind of campground could be simply and easily established.
Let's also not forget Utah's Housing First program, which, like Chico's chat, simply says, find housing, which can be renovated housing, closed motels, any other place where people can be comfortably and safely housed. The Housing First program helped statewide more than 2,000 other people out of homelessness. Within 10 years, the number of chronically homeless people in Utah has been reduced by 91%. In the neighboring state of Wyoming, on the other hand, homelessness rose by 213% over the same period.
The Housing First program also works in other countries. Finland has been implementing the Housing First concept since 2008 and is the only country in the European Union where the number of homeless people is declining. The Finnish NGO Y Foundation buys flats on the private housing market, renovates existing apartments with one or two rooms. Then they provide the flats to people in need. Social workers who have offices in the residential buildings help with financial issues such as applications for social benefits. Four out of five former homeless people make their way back into a stable life through Finland's Housing First program. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We'll take a short break and be back to wrap up the show.
Somebody cries, why, Somebody say,
here.
Somebody say,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say,
here.
Somebody cries,
why.
Somebody say,
here. Into my arms. Into my arms. Yes, I know I long to live. Into my arms.
Somebody say, hello, hello, hello. Somebody say, somebody cry, why.
Kulumani
sense njang.
Maya chabule basitanda. Yo, wo.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, and we've been looking at some promising, if partial, solutions to making the planet more sustainable. Some of them seem a bit far-fetched and even risky, like sprinkling the atmosphere with diamond powder.
Others are very expensive, like putting electro nets in the Chicago River or rechanneling the mighty Mississippi to save New Orleans.
But many are literally and figuratively dirt cheap, like not throwing away food or turning logs into biomulch. As we've often said on this program, much of the technology and know-how to save the earth is already here. It depends on our having the will and self-discipline to implement it.
Stay tuned to KZFR, where up next we'll have North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. In a related topic, she'll be talking with Matt York from IlluminAid, speaking about helping the poorest countries with ways to reach and teach people with technology.
You have been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. Be sure to visit our website for notes and recordings of recent programs, plus an ever-growing list of resources provided by our guests. The web address is ecotopiakzfr.com. We also welcome your comments and suggestions. Send us an email at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
You are the new day. If you can but prove to me you are the new day, send the sun in time for dawn. Let the birds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me say, you are. Knowing we must bear thoughts occur that this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans mourn, good slow words and end it all, lie around me. Before the new day.
next is North State Give and Take. And North State Give and Take is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters, that's you, and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico.